Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You. Today I have a very, very accomplished lady, Dr. Neetika Batra, with me. Neetika, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Neetika is currently the Dean of School of Inspired Leadership. And before that, she was an investment banker with SBI Capital Markets. Quite a transition, Deepika, from professional manager, you went consulting to academics. Tell me about your early work and some of your learnings.
Well, my early work was more into investment banking, like you said, and it was a very exciting time because these were the 90s and, you know, privatization was just coming and happening to the Indian economy, and a lot of new avenues were opening up for business as well as the investment banking area. Mm-hmm. And so I was very fortunate that I got to experiment with many of these activities, you know, starting with investments in mutual fund, to fundraising, then to, you know, project advisory, disinvestment program of the government, and even power sector, which was opening up then, right? Hmm. So I think I consider myself blessed that, work-wise, there was a lot of learning. Hmm. And also, I think work ethics-wise, you know, I was in the right place with these people from the state bank. Mm. Who were very process driven, very structured, very thorough in their trainings, you know, so that created that environment of professionalism. And of course there were, you know, other peers from other MBA schools and who were bubbling with energy and, you know, new ideas. So I think it was that right blend. And I was in a place like Bombay, right, where, you know, which is the professional capital, and I always advise everybody to start their careers from there because it's a very professional, very, you know, very nice environment for people to work in and get their work ethics right.
Correct, correct. And there's always something happening in Bombay.
Yes, absolutely. True.
So tell me, you know, then what made you move from an exciting corporate career to academics?
Yeah, that was quite interesting and quite unexpected, in fact. So after my stint with the CAPS, I was in US for a few years because, you know, my husband was posted there and I wanted to devote a few years to my family, you know, and so I took a little sabbatical there. And when I came back to India in 2005, you know, there was this question in my mind always, do I want to go back to the corporate sector? Mm. Do I want to spend the rest of my life chasing targets, making more money? I want to do something more meaningful.
Correct.
But I didn't know what. Mm. So again, I was very fortunate, you know, as destiny would have been. Mm. So my friends and my professors, who were now directors in some MBA institutes, they approached me. Why don't you try teaching, Neetika? Because my academic record was always great, you know. School, college, university, I was always the topper. Mm-hmm. So at that time also they used to tell me, Neetika, you're made for the world of academics. But I was like, no, enough. Let me see what the real world is all about.
Right.
I decided to give it a try. And I didn't know I could teach. But when I went into the classroom in a management, program, mm-hmm. I realized this teaching was fun. This kind of teaching, you know, which is more about interaction with students, right, which is exchange of ideas, which gives me more learning, which enables students also to learn from practitioners like me. You know, I did not have that facility back then when I was studying.
Sure.
So I thought I could be very, meaningful and add value to people's life through this. So that's how I went on to academics. And
that's when soil happened.
That's when soil happened because I worked as a visiting faculty because I wanted to strengthen my, you know, work first by understanding curriculum of different places, different courses. I wanted to do a PhD also. And when I met Anil and Soil, I was so fascinated by the whole concept, innovative model here. I wanted to join, but I also wanted to do PhD. But Anil was very encouraging, so I ended up doing both.
Fantastic. So, yeah. You know, tell me about Soil. I mean, you know, I've read about it, I've heard about it, but I'd love to hear from you. What does Soil do which is different from other educational institutions?
I think Soil does what really needs to be done in education, is what I feel. You know, the purpose of education should not be confined confined to just making money, you know, enabling people to have a career or, you know, an employment. It is meant to empower people for lifelong, you know. It's meant for people to think well, to be good human beings. And education system should help people do that, you know, not just focus purely on IQ, but on their multiple intelligence, because each person is special. Each person has some strengths, right? So how do you encourage that? How you, you know, motivate them to leverage their potentials and have a holistic thinking? I think that's where SOIL comes in, and our curriculum, our pedagogy, entire thing is designed in such a way that we focus a lot on intangibles and we build transformation, and through that, you know, try to empower people for lifelong learning and careers. So I think that is where it's kind of different. Yeah.
And this is for undergrad, postgrad, MBA.
It's postgrad. It's postgrad. So you know, so we have right now two campuses. One is for people with prior work experience. At least 2 years is what we need. And the other one is for the 2-year AICT approved in Manesar, which is for freshers, which is based on design thinking, liberal arts, you know, blend of that into management.
I see. Wonderful. So, you know, tell me, you spent several years now in education, and then, you know, you yourself, as you just mentioned, were academically, you know, topper at school, college, and business school. How have you seen education evolve? From the time you were studying till the time now when you are teaching?
I think we've come a long way. I think it's really exciting to get education in today's time and space. Hmm. I wish I was here, you know, on the other side. Of course, teaching is like learning anyway. Yeah. But I think now education has become much more oriented to practical application. So in our times, it was more about theory. Right, so practical dimensions were missing. We didn't have so many practitioners coming to class and telling us how things will move in the real world. Mm-hmm. Right, and so a lot of that has come in. A lot of interdisciplinary approach has come in. So people have started recognizing the importance of liberal arts, the importance of soft skills, right, you know, into education. Earlier, it was just the hard skills which were focused on. Right. The pedagogy has changed so much. Now it is more about case studies, about connecting with the students at an emotional level. You know, a lot of those other things, you know, which are very important to trigger interest in students has come in a lot. And I see a lot of students taking up work outside the classroom also. So they are like starting their own ventures. They are doing so many things, industry connect on their own. Which kind of activity was restricted in our times, not as much. So I think all this is leading to education actually adding a lot of value to people's personality and what they want to do in life.
Correct. And I mean, I'm much older than you are, but you know, these opportunities didn't exist also at that time.
Exactly, exactly. I think the careers didn't exist as much also. So we had very few career opportunities, but now there are no boundaries, you know, so you can hop on from anywhere to anywhere. You can pick and choose a liberal art course with a commerce, you know, you can create your own blend. I think that's very exciting. Yeah.
But tell me, you know, liberal arts is something which has now become extremely popular. You're doing so much liberal arts. There are other universities which are doing. And yet, when I remember when I was growing up, liberal arts was not something that Indians normally did. It was doctor, lawyer, engineer, IAS.
Yes, yes.
Or chartered accountant. What is changing, I mean, in terms of either aspirations of parents and children, or is it just the environment that has changed?
Maybe both. I think people are realizing the importance of, you know, subjects like psychology, sociology, philosophy, because, you know, the underlying foundation to any stream is human behavior. At the end of the day, it is human beings who are doing work and who are being done for. So unless you understand the context well, and unless you have those soft skills, I think your hard skills will not have that kind of productivity. So I think people are increasingly realizing the importance of that and are accepting that more now than they were in the earlier times.
And I guess employers are also willing to accept different kind of skill sets.
Absolutely. I think employers are also now realizing that, you know, people with teamwork skills and, you know, being able to connect the communication part and understanding the context is very important. So that's where new streams like design thinking is coming up. So employers have also increasingly realized it's not just the hard, but the, you know, soft part, which is equally important.
And yet, you know, in our country, government has a very strong control on education and educational institutions. What are your thoughts on this?
So, I mean, if you look at the history, I think government control was required when we got our independence, because, you know, somewhere we needed to create our own education system and enable that education to reach the masses, which could not have happened with only the private sector. And also, I think some control is required for ensuring quality. Otherwise, you know, you'll have fly-by-night operators and fleecing the masses with some fake degrees and all that. But I feel now we've pretty much matured. And we've come at a stage where it is desirable to open the doors, right? And let the free market forces flow, because that always leads to good quality, is what I have seen, whether it is economy or it is banking or it is any other space, education. I think free market forces should be allowed. Government can keep a little bit of overall supervision and control to see that, you know, broadly parameters are going well, but not a micro level kind of a control, because I feel that could, you know, the opening up of the sector could lead to a lot of foreign players coming in, global players coming in. That could improve the quality of, you know, education here in India. It will also avoid the brain drain, you know, why people should go out and study and then settle there itself. So we lose a lot of talent that way. So I think both ways it is critical that we think of.
Your comment is a very interesting segue to my next question, which is that, you know, with the entry of so many foreign institutions, which come in with their own standards and their own excellence levels, etc. What will it do to so many institutions that are just carrying on and providing, you know, education, which does not necessarily get a job for people?
Exactly. That's what I'm saying, that, you know, why should we feel scared of competition? You know, now at this stage, I can understand in the earlier stages, you know, when we were very, very nebulous, we were just growing, you know, we needed that protection. But now, of course, we have come a long way. Economy has opened 20, 30 years back. So we are at a very mature stage. And anyway, all these global platforms are there online. So why can't we have them offline also? You know, and like I said, survival of the fittest. So that would happen. People are mature. People can take a good call. Let's trust them. And let's improve the quality.
I agree. And therefore, the next question on online education means, with this pandemic, online education is becoming a reality. And I was talking to someone in the US, and they were saying that educational institutions are worried that their high paying foreign students may stop coming because we'll give them classes online. What will online education do to India?
I think it can be really, really, you know, great if it can come full-fledged into India. I feel both on the demand as well as the supply side. Because, you know, there are many segments of the population who are deprived of education purely because of logistics reasons. You know, they are not able to step out of the home. Say the elderly people, you know, people at an older age. Or let's say women, you know, who are confined to home. Or even people with special abilities, you know. So I think those are the segments which can really benefit with online education coming in. Now sitting at their homes, they can do it. Yeah. Likewise, people in rural areas, villages, smaller towns, you know, they will have access to good quality education from across the globe. That's really important. Yeah. And on the supply side also, if you notice that, you know, now with the virtual world, it's become so easy to get leaders and academicians from across the globe into the classes. Earlier that was not possible, you know, or was very, very restricted. And now you can get the best talent into the classrooms. So I think it's really going to open up a lot of opportunities for us. and it's going to be much more exciting from here.
You know, you're so right. I mean, during this lockdown period, I actually managed to finish an 8-month program from Harvard on scriptures of the world, and I finished it in 2 months. Wow. And so this is something I would never have been able to do at my age.
Exactly. I mean, we are always, saying, okay, we don't have time. You know, but when you're sitting at home, you know, you have that flexibility. You can do it as and how you want. Then we can experiment a lot more.
So one more question on education before I move to the next segment. This is the world of millennials, and now the Gen Zs who are coming up. How are the millennials changing education in our country?
I think millennials and both Gen Z, I mean, they're very, very bold people, very courageous people. I think they're challenging the age-old norms, and very rightly so. And they are experimenting with formats which were not there earlier. So, for example, now I see people at 18, 20 starting their own ventures, e-commerce setups, you know, and having that courage to go out and do it. It's wonderful to see the young generation stepping up the game here. And, so that's one big thing that I'm seeing, that education they're taking as something which is more relevant to them, which is more practical to them, which they can relate to, rather than just something that they want to study in the classes and have no application or relevance outside. So they are connecting the dots very well. And they are doing many things with education, which is different from our traditional definition of that sector.
Thank you. So moving on, Ithika, you know, my next question to you is on gender balance. Gender balance has been something which is talked about in the Western world for the last 20, 30 years. In India, only in the last few years, you started to talk of gender balance. And yet, you, as being a woman, has spent time in State Bank of India, where you've had a woman chairman of State Bank for the first time. You are in education and so on. I would love to get your thoughts on how do we correct the gender balance in our country?
See, I think I've always believed that most of the boundaries that we have or most of the constraints that we feel are more in our own minds, you know, than outside. So somewhere, if we just have the courage to get rid of those constraints within our mind, you know, then a lot becomes easier outside also. But having said that, I know it's not easy for women, you know. Maybe I was very lucky to have parents who said that, okay, you are my son and daughter both, like, you know, or to have found people in my employers and State Bank, Anil, and everybody who respect a lot of gender balances. But, you know, not many women and not many recruiters may be like that. So I feel that, you know, we do need to create environments which are more conducive for women, you know, which can be more encouraging for them. And it's not just at workplaces, it's also at the family level, you know, because, you know, so women are considered like the primary caretakers. So they have to take on double load of the family as well as work if they want to step out. So somewhere I think that creating that environment and encouragement for women at home as well as workplaces is very important. Maybe some kind of mentoring which can go on, which can give them that encouragement and direction, both is important. Yeah.
Very interesting. So I'm going to move to some personal questions for you. You know, you've had different, you know, careers in different buckets. My first question to you is that, are there any people who had an influence on you? And if so, what have you learned from them?
Oh, many people. I think I learn every day from everyone. So I'm one person who loves to observe people and, you know, wonder how they manage to do it and, you know, how can I do that? So I think I love to do that. And right from my childhood, you know, stages, like I said, my parents, my father was a big influence on me because he taught me the value of truth, you know, and to how to have the courage to be following the path of truth, and not just true to outside, but to your own self. So do things which you believe in rather than what the world wants you to do. So that he gave me that courage. My mother, who's always looked at things positively and has always been content with whatever you have kind of a philosophy at the age of 80. She's still independent, you know, she doesn't want to depend on somebody. My children, I think childhood is the most beautiful phase and teaches you a lot. So they're always living in that moment. They're always finding joy and happiness in everything. No biases, nothing. No future, no past, you know. So I think I've learned to live in the moment with them. My mentors, like I said, Anil and, you know, my other previous bosses from State Bank, who taught me how to be excellent at work, how to aim at excellence and improve your skill set constantly. My students, you know, my students, alumni, who are always connected with me, who are always enthusiastic about future. So I think a lot of people have had an influence, family, friends, everybody in the ecosystem, even my house help, you know, when I look at her, that despite such harsh conditions, she still comes and serves me with a smile and with all the love. So giving is not related to your financial background. It's a lot to do with your character. So a lot of things like that are beautiful to learn from.
I mean, I'm so happy to hear this because not too many people actually express gratitude. And you've just done that. You know, that's fantastic. So my next question to Anupita would be that, you know, you work with young people. My question is that if you were a role model to millions of children who followed your life choices, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
One thing that I aspire to do, and one thing that you know, has been in me for the last few years, is to work more at the grassroots level. So my work and my whatever little talent I may have could benefit the people who really need it at that grassroots level. You know, the young children of, let's say, daily wages labor or household people and things like that, who have a lot of potential, but probably don't have that kind of direction in life. So I think there the value add will be immensely high if people like me can go and, you know, teach them or guide them or handhold them. So that's one dream I harbor for a long time, and probably I will, that will be next phase of life for me. And then I can say, okay, that's a role model. Till now, there's nothing much I can say about that. Yeah.
So I have time for two more questions. The next question is, what would be three words that describe Neetika?
Three words would be, I think, honesty, truthfulness, that is. I would say hard work. I believe a lot in hard work, and nothing comes easy, nothing, no shortcuts for me. And finally, I would say positive attitude, you know, because look at things in a positive manner. Look at the glass half full rather than empty, that philosophy.
Yeah. My last question to you, and this is a question on failure.
Okay.
I've often observed this, that most of us in India and or South Asia or even Asia don't teach children that it's okay to fail. And you know, everyone wants to come far, be ahead of the do this, chalo, etc.
Yeah.
And yet failure is an important part of our life. So my question to you is, what have been some of your learnings from some of your mistakes or your failures?
So a lot of them, I think we are all human beings. We make a lot of mistakes, and when we are young, we make more. As we grow old, you know, we learn from, hopefully we learn from the previous mistakes. So I think over time I've learned a lot. And failures, like you rightly said, you know, is something which is considered like a stigma here, you know, and we don't celebrate failures as much as we celebrate successes, you know. So, but that's really important because, you know, the young generation needs to learn that life doesn't come easy, but you need to have resilience, you know. It's okay to fall, but it's important to get up and run again, you know. So that resilience is very, very important. And that comes, I feel, from environment again, you know, from your homes, from your workplaces and others, which can give you that safety net, which can give you that also the freedom to explore and say, okay, make mistakes, but don't repeat mistake, make new mistakes all the time. So I think I was fortunate again to have that kind of environment where I made a lot of mistakes during work life and in personal life. But I look at them still with gratitude, I would say, because I've learned from them. That made me more strong. So I think it's important to make mistakes and important to fall, but also more important to get up and not remain down. Right. So yeah, that is important. Take rest, take pause, feel sad, whatever you have to do. Spend time, but then, you know, get up and go again.
Thank you very much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you, and I wish you lots of success in everything you do.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure talking to you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.